This program is a rebroadcast of this week's Hour of Lynn Canal Voice. Two of the three Haines School Board candidates spoke with reporter Abby Collins on Thursday, September 21st.
This program is underwritten by the Greater Haines Chamber of Commerce, advocating for a supportive business community.
The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Canal Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. This is Lynn Canal Voice, a public affairs show from the KHNS newsroom. I'm reporter Abby Collins. Today we're talking with the three candidates for Haines School Board about why they're running to retain their seats. We'll also hear from them about the major issues facing the Haines School right now. In a few minutes, I'll be joined by Sarah Chapel, Anne-Marie Palmieri, and Brian Clay. But before that discussion, let's take a look at recent and upcoming news in the Upper Lynn Canal. News director Emily Files is here with me. We're going to chat about what's been going on in local news. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
So, Emily, you recently started looking into a potential timber sale out Mud Bay. What do we know about that right now?
Yeah, the University of Alaska just began advertising for a timber sale on the Chilkat Peninsula in the Mud Bay area. I just saw a copy of the advertisement this morning. They're offering up to 400 acres of old-growth Sitka spruce and western hemlock for sale. That doesn't necessarily mean the whole thing is going to be logged, but that's how much they're making available. And the sale offering coincides with the Haines Planning Commission trying to decide whether there should be more explicit rules around resource extraction in the Mud Bay Rural Residential Zone. So I'm looking into the timber sale today, and we'll have more information soon. The deadline for comments and for bids is October 23rd to the University of Alaska Department of Land Management.
And you've been closely following the Haines and Skagway races for assembly and mayor. We have the municipal elections coming up October 3rd. Can you give us a rundown of who's running for what and where?
Well, the Haines race has been competitive from the beginning, with six people running for three open assembly seats and two mayor candidates. But in Skagway, things got interesting after the candidate filing deadline closed. At first, there was just one candidate, the incumbent Mark Schaefer, for mayor, and Dan Henry was the only assembly candidate for two open seats. But now there are five write-in challengers for assembly and mayor. Monica Carlson, who was appointed to an open seat this summer on the assembly, is running for mayor. And there are four write-ins for assembly: Roger Griffin, David Brenna, Philip Clark, and Dewey McCracken. Carlson, Griffin, and Brenna were all motivated to run by their opposition to the new Tidelands lease with White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad. And we're going to hear from all of the Skagway candidates, hopefully, at a KHNS and Skagway News Forum next week on September 29th at 6 p.m. in the AB Hall.
And I've been watching the school board races. As I mentioned, we'll hear from the Haines candidates in just a few minutes. The Haines race is uncontested, and actually there's four seats and only three incumbent candidates right now. But in Skagway, there are four candidates running for two open seats. Kara Cosgrove is the only incumbent, and she's running against Cesare Doxay-Leopold, Heather Rodig, and Denise Sager. And we'll hear from those candidates in a story in tonight's newscast. So, Emily, there are a lot of people in town this week for Southeast Conference. One of them is the commissioner of the Departments of Corrections, who you met with about a community jails contract. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, the community jails contract makes up a significant part of the local police department's funding. The police department actually runs a rural jail facility. So the DOC commissioner was in Haines this week for Southeast Conference, and while he was here, Haines was the very first town to sign on to a revised community jails contract. The DOC is implementing this new pre-trial services program starting in January. It's required by the Crime Reform Bill SB 91, And DOC decided the best way to offer pretrial monitoring and prevention services in small towns like Haines is by partnering with the local police department. So it's being incorporated into the rural jails contract DOC has with these communities. And it'll mean some additional work on the part of the police department, but also additional money. Haines will get a boost of more than $30,000 in its state contract.
And another one of the people that is in town this week is Representative Sam Keto. He is holding a town hall with Haines residents later today. It's at 4:30 at the Bald Eagle Foundation. And he's talking about the upcoming special session that will include talks about revenue and the state's fiscal situation. And the governor has also asked legislators to take up proposed changes to that criminal reform bill that you were just mentioning, SB 91, during that session. So he'll take questions and comments from the community on those things, as well as anything else that they want to bring up. And then also in that realm of criminal justice that you were just mentioning, we have another guest coming to town next week, the director of the Alaska State Troopers. Can you tell us more about that visit?
Right now, I've gotten confirmation directly from State Trooper Colonel Hans Brinke that he will be in Haines next week. He'll be meeting with borough officials and also attending Tuesday's assembly meeting. So this will be a chance to hopefully clarify what kind of trooper service Haines can count on now that the local position here has been moved elsewhere in the state. There's been a lot of questions around this issue and a lot of controversy around whether the local police service area should be expanded in the wake of the trooper position being moved. So hopefully we'll get some more clarity on that situation.
And is this an opportunity for community members to share their thoughts on the situation as well?
Well, there's always a public comment period at assembly meetings, so I'm sure that members of the public can weigh in at that point. I'm not sure if the assembly will allow questions from the community at the assembly meeting that Colonel Brinke will be attending, but the assembly will certainly have the opportunity to ask him questions. So maybe if members of the public have something they really want to ask them, they could talk to one of their assembly members and make sure that they bring it up. And the head of the Wildlife Troopers is also possibly attending, but that hasn't been confirmed yet.
One more bit of news that I want to touch on this morning. We've been following the moose hunt taking place right now. And Emily, can you tell us what's been harvested so far?
As of Wednesday afternoon, 15 animals had been harvested. So things are going pretty fast. It opened last Friday, so it hasn't even been going on for a week yet. But it's not quite as fast as last year when the hunt closed after only about a week. So unless things slow down significantly, Fish and Game will probably shut it down by emergency order once the number of moose taken gets into the around 20 range. The department's management goal for the Haines moose hunt is between 20 and 25 animals.
And that has happened the last 2 years, closing the hunt early because it moves so quickly. So
yes,
we'll see what happens.
We'll see
this
if
year.
We break a new record this year, but it looks like last year might be the fastest one in recent memory.
All right, that's news. That's KHNS News Director Emily Files checking in with us about the week's news. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.
And we'll be covering those stories as they develop. You can find the stories we've already done on those topics at khns.org. I'm Abby Collins, and this is Lynn Canal Voice. You're listening to Lynn Canal Voice, a public affairs show from the KHNS News Team. I'm Abby Collins. There are some big issues on the table for the Haines School right now. Declining enrollment leading to decreased state funding, and the district is looking for a new superintendent. There are 4 school board seats opening this October, 1 one-year seat and 3 3-year terms. There are only 3 candidates running right now, and they're all incumbents. With me in the studio are 2 of those candidates, Sarah Chapel and Anne-Marie Palmieri. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Abby.
Thanks.
If you have a question or comment about the discussion, you can give us a call at 766-2020. We'll start out generally with each of you telling me about yourself and how long you've been on the school board and why you want to retain your seat. Sarah, do you want to start?
Okay. My name's Sarah Chapel. This is my 5th going on 6th year on the school board. I have 3 kids who have made their way in various degrees through the Haines School. My girls this year are in 5th and 7th grades. And I ran for the school board originally just because I wanted to give back. I love our school and the kids. And I wanted to do what I could to make our school the best it could be. And we have had some bumps in the road in terms of finding the best leader for our school over the last several years. And that's really why I wanted to run again, because I felt like our work is not done in terms of finding that really excellent fit for our school. So I want to be part of that process and help find a really strong leader.
All right, Anne-Marie.
All right, I'm Anne-Marie Palmieri. I've been in Haines for 20 years. I am the mother of 3 kids. I have a son who's in college at UAF, and then a son who is a senior, and then another who is in 9th grade at the Haines School. I've been on the school board for, I think it's 8 years now, maybe 9. I can't remember. I joined the school board because it was a way that I could give back and I could be involved in my kids' education, in helping to set policy, determine how we as a school can provide a good and relevant education for all the kids in the valley.
And how long have you been the president of the board?
I know it's been the last 3 years. I think I've been the president for 4 years, but there was a break there. So.
And why do you want to have another term?
Well, like Sarah, I think that there are a lot of things that we're looking for in a leader for the school and in hiring a new superintendent. I'm excited about some of the things that we were talking about the other night in our board objectives. You know, how do we chart a path for the next several years with declining enrollment and the budget and, you know, being able to provide an education that's helpful for all of our kids, whether they're college bound or whether they're going to start their own small business and go fishing or, you know, indirectly into the workforce, if they're going to go into some type of vocational training. You know, how is it that we meet all of those needs with the money and the resources that we have? So that type of planning, I think, is fun and interesting.
And Anne-Marie, what do you think should be the number one priority of the school board at this point in time?
I don't know. I don't know if there's a number one priority. I think there are several high priorities on our list. The first is going to be, you know, finding a long-term superintendent, someone who has the knowledge, skills, and abilities to develop a vision that we as a board and a community agree with, and to lead us, you know, in implementing that vision, as well as, you know, what I just said about the budget and trying to come up with a plan for, you know, the next few years, with potentially declining enrollment and associated declining revenue from the state.
Sarah, what do you think about that?
Well, the school board did just meet this week in work session to talk about this question and to set our priorities as a school board with the superintendent. And those things that Amory talked about are the obvious work that rose to the top, right? So find and hire a superintendent who is going to be the instructional leader of the school, and focus on our budget, a budget that's open and transparent, but is also able to respond to changing needs while coming to terms with the fact that we have had declining enrollment over several years, and so our budget is contracting, and figuring out how to take care of that. And then the third priority on that list is that focus on academic excellence and ensuring that our students really are graduating with the skills that they need in order to be thoughtful participants in a changing world, whether that's, you know, making their way to higher education or stepping out into the workforce, really ensuring that our students are ready to go once they graduate. And that starts at the beginning, right? I mean, that starts in kindergarten and first grade, and just making sure that our policies and our budget, our staff and our leaders are all lined up appropriately to serve our children.
What do you think the district is doing well, Sarah?
What do I think the district is doing well? We have amazing teachers, and that is really the heart of our school. I'm impressed every day at the level of passion and innovation and skill that go into every classroom experience for our children, and I think that we are getting better and better at supporting our teachers and making sure that they have the resources and the backup they need to be as effective as possible.
Amory, what do you think?
I think that that the staff are excellent, as Sarah said, in finding new ways to engage the kids to be interested in, you know, whatever the subject matter is. And I think that the administration is really top-notch as well. I think that in Haines, we have a lot of opportunities for our kids, and it's just being in a small school, you know, whether it's being part of the basketball team or, you know, being in the music program or DDF or, you know, running cross country. It's one of the reasons that our family has stayed in Haines over the years, is the school. And you don't have to be, or the kids don't have to be, you know, a top-notch basketball player in order to be on the team. If you want to play, you can be on the team. And just that feeling of inclusiveness and support, I think, just really helps give a foundation to kids just as they go forward in life. So, I think that is carried through also, you know, just with how much all the teachers care about each individual child. So, you know, there's academic rigor as well in the school, which is always important, you know, that kids are getting a good education academically, you know, but there's also this the sense of community and the sense of just foundation, I think, that it gives to the kids. That's great.
The next probably obvious question is, what do you think the district can improve on? We'll start with you, Anne-Marie.
You know, I think in any organization, there are always things to improve on. And I think that it's a challenging question, you know, when it comes to the school board, because the role of the school board is to set policy and to develop the budget and to supervise the superintendent. So we as the school board don't get into the weeds of the administration. So we're not the ones who are at the school, you know, enforcing the dress code. So that's you know, that's something that happens, you know, at the school. I think from the role of the school board, I think some things that we can do better, I think that we can, as a board, set out a process for the budget that is, I would use the word transparent, but maybe just more clear and open, just to have conversations early on that explain why decisions are being made. And I guess that, and I'm coming from a board standpoint as opposed to, you know, kind of an administration day-to-day standpoint. I think communication is always important, as well as, you know, trying to make sure that everybody understands, you know, why a decision was made. You may not agree with it, but I think if you understand kind of the basis and the rationale for, you know, how we as a group of seven went from point A to point B on a decision, then at least, you know, people could understand that.
Mm-hmm. Sarah?
Well, I think communication is one of those points that we could improve on, or I guess more that I think we sometimes struggle with getting the kind of feedback we're looking for. And so, you know, sometimes we have school board meetings and there are not very many people who attend. And so there may be ways that we can reach out into the community more effectively to gather that feedback instead of just expecting that people will come to us. And I think we probably should explore those, because there have been times when we've made a decision with, you know, all of the as much information as we could get, and it's not until much later that we get feedback from the community that maybe people aren't satisfied with that decision. And so I think we should do a better job about putting ourselves out there and maybe being ourselves asking the questions instead of expecting folks to come to us. And that, you know, it may be as simple as sitting down at the radio and chatting with Abby every once in a while to talk these things through. And then that maybe gets people thinking about the issues and talking to the school board, and helps us think about policies, how we set policy, and, you know, how we can be leaders in making some of those changes. And sometimes we are just helpful guides in explaining to a parent with a question who the best person is in the school to talk to about their question or their idea. Because often it's not at the school board level. Often it's, you know, starts with talking with your teacher or sitting down with the principal if you have an idea that maybe affects more than than one class or one student. So I'd like to see us be more proactive in communication.
You mentioned that sometimes you'll make a decision and not find out until later how a lot of people feel about it. Is there a decision that you've made while on the board that you think differently about now? Anything that you would have changed your mind about in retrospect?
Yes. Well, I guess the preschool comes to mind most directly for me, because that's an example where I felt personally I had a blind spot, and I wasn't able to hear the feedback. I wasn't getting direct feedback personally, but I realize now that's because people knew how passionately I felt about the preschool, and so I really wasn't. They probably felt I wasn't able to hear it, and they probably would have been right. So we backtracked on our original decision to invite the preschool into the school, and that you know, it set off some ripples into the community that could have been, you know, a bad decision for the preschool ultimately, but it ended up manifesting in something that is really beautiful and exciting, and that's a new preschool building in conjunction with the senior center. That there was just a really nice story on KHNS that I listened to last night. It actually kind of brought a tear to my eye, because it was a long, hard road to get the preschool where they needed to be. But personally, I'm sorry that I wasn't able to remove myself emotionally a little bit and listen to people. That's something that I'm sorry about.
And Marie, is there a decision that you think differently about now, or would have changed your mind about?
Yeah, so I've thought a lot about that preschool decision.
And we don't have to like harp on it.
No, it's that was so hard. And I think at least with the preschool, boy, that was a learning experience. And I wish that the process had been different. I wish that we had slowed it down and set out a process, because I don't know if my decision would have been different at the time. Just looking back, I don't know if I would have made a different decision, but I think the way that I wish that I had handled that as the president of the school board would have been to kind of set out a timeline and to tell people when would be a good time in this process in order to make some comments. When are we going to be inviting, you know, public input? And I think that was some of the concern at the time, was that people didn't know when a decision was going to be made or when they would have an opportunity to give input. And so it just kind of mushroomed into a real concern and a real passion for some people because they didn't know the timeline. So I think that was one of those learning experiences for me, when I thought, okay, you know, how is it that we make sure everybody knows what we're doing and when we're going to do it, and you know, how we're going to receive information. So
can I
Sure.
I'm going to say one more thing. It's not about the preschool, but one thing I think the school board has gotten better about in terms of the budget is asking some of the right questions, and in terms of the consequences of our budgetary decisions. So there was another decision that that I was a part of several years ago when we were in another kind of time where we had to do some contraction in terms of our budget, and we shifted around some of the math staff, and we cut, I think, one math teacher or some one position that had to that was teaching a couple of math classes, and I did not realize that the consequence of that decision, it cascaded down from the high school all the way down to the lower elementary grades, and it affected how much PE the little kids were getting each week, because the PE teacher had to then needed to teach a math class, and then there were some other holes that that person needed to fill, and so there was this. There was this consequence that I could have never guessed, that what we were just focused on math and getting the math taken care of. And it's so it seems like a good decision at the time. And all the math classes were taken care of and the math structure actually worked really well. But there was this other consequence that that we weren't aware of because we didn't ask the right questions, or we didn't take the time to fully explore the consequences of our decision. And I think we're a lot better at asking those questions now and understanding on a deeper level how our budgetary decisions affect the student experience on a day-to-day basis.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to bring up another budgetary decision that was made this year that caused a little bit of a stir, which was the music teacher position being eliminated and the reshuffling to save some money in the budget. And I'm just curious if you can sort of explain now the thinking behind that and why that was the decision that was made.
Well, I guess you have to start with me now, because you started with Anne-Marie before, right? Lucky. That was definitely a hard decision, and but it's not one that I would pinpoint as saying it's not a decision that I would have changed, and the idea behind that is that our staff is our number one expense, and so when we're trying to get our budget under control, we have to look really closely at exactly how we utilize our staff and what we can do to position staff most efficiently to get students what they need. And when the administration took a really deep look at that, they realized that we had the skills within our tenured staff to take care of what we thought was really important, which is having a strong math program and continuing our music program at the same level that it's always been. And but that meant not renewing the contract of our high school music teacher, middle school and high school music teacher, who, you know, kids loved and had developed really strong relationships with him. He brought the middle school music program up to really an amazing level. And so there was a lot of heartache, you know, and angst over that decision, especially because I think a lot of people were worried that we were going to cut the music program, that eventually this would mean that music was going to go away entirely. And this school board, I mean, I think this has been true for many, many years, but I know that this group believes that activities are an essential part of a well-rounded education. And we work very, very hard to make sure that music, art, and athletics, and outside activities are really supported and nurtured within the school community. And so we were not going to cut the music program. But we did need to make some really tough decisions in order to see if we could tighten up the budget a little bit and I don't know if I remember. I don't know if I answered your question. Maybe Anne-Marie should take it from here.
Is there anything else you want to add, Anne-Marie?
So that was yet another, you know, tough thing about last year. There were several tough issues last year. So the administration the way the school board works is that the school board has these broad, you know, somewhat limited powers. We develop a vision, we set the budget, we do policy, we supervise the superintendent, and then we hand over kind of the vision and in the reins to the administration, and we say, here's some money, you know, here's where we want to go. You guys at the administration are the educational experts and the instructional leaders in our community. You know how to make this all happen. And that was a recommendation from the administration of a way to continue the music program at a high quality level. And I think that, again, there were some process issues associated with that. And I think that if there had been maybe some different communication, the way that that came out, that it would have, maybe people would have understood more kind of that our decision wasn't to cut the music program or to diminish the music program. You know, we're trying to save it. We're trying to save music and arts and activities. Because there are kids that come to school specifically for those things. Some kids come to school for physics. Some kids come to school for band. You know, it's whatever engages, you know, each individual child and how we can provide that. So I think, again, getting back to communication and, you know, and how all of the pieces of our puzzle fit together. The budget is a complicated thing.
So the school board has a pretty big task on its hands right now. At the end of last school year, you ended the contract with Superintendent Tony Habra after about a year. Do you think anything needs to be done differently this time around to make sure you're hiring somebody who will have the longevity that the position requires? Anne-Marie will start with you.
So in our workshop the other night, we were just talking about, you know, the process that we want to go through in order to hire a superintendent, and if we want to run that search ourselves or get some help from either a search committee or the Association of Alaska School Boards. They helped us last time. And I guess that's, you know, that's one thing that we're really going to have to have to think about is, you know, what the skills are that we're looking for, and how do we ensure that the candidate that we select has those demonstrated skills. I don't know. I've thought about this a lot. What happened during that hiring process? You know, was there anything that we could have known at the time? Were there any red flags? And I haven't really come up with anything at this point. I think there are some. There was one idea that was kind of floated out the other night was about site visits where someone from Haines would go to, you know, say, you know, Valdez.
The candidate's district.
Right, the candidate's hometown, and have conversations with people that they work with, people that they work for, community members, board members, staff, you know, just to get a more well-rounded picture, rather than, you know, someone making three reference phone calls, because that gives you a narrow picture. So how is it that we can really delve into what these candidates could bring to the table? So those are things that we're thinking about, and I think over the next couple of months we'll figure something out.
I think that's right. I mean, we have we're gonna be some similar challenges. We anticipate some similar challenges this time around, because it does appear that there are a number of similarly sized districts in Alaska who are also looking for superintendents. And so there's some level of competition, I think, for the best candidates out there. And so that it's worrisome to me, because it really comes down to the applicant pool and working to make sure that we're given the choice to find the best fit for our district. And so we want to work to make sure that the applicants are as strong as possible, and then also giving ourselves time and permission to start over again if the applicant pool is not what we had hoped. And we did also talk about that in the work session, that we are giving ourselves permission to run a process and to start over again if it is not what we'd hoped. And because it really does come down to the pool. And if it's a shallow pool, then I don't know. I cannot finish that metaphor. We're not going to be able to kick around much water. I don't. So that I hope we'll be true to that intention, and allow ourselves to make the very best decision, even if it means starting over again. I hope we won't have to do that. But I do think that this group is really committed to getting it right. I mean, we really want to get it right. And but you never know. I mean, you don't know how long somebody's gonna stay in town and what their own personal goals are outside of their professional goals. So we're gonna try our best. We're gonna work to get as much feedback from the community as possible. And that's something that we have done in these processes. We've brought folks in, had forums and had people fill out little comment cards. But I think we're going to talk more about what kind of hiring committee we want to build, and to broaden the level of input that is given to this decision, because I don't think that we should, the school board does ultimately make the decision, the hiring decision, but I want to make sure that the input that we get before we make that ultimate decision is as detailed and inclusive as possible, because we need more perspectives. I mean, I think more brains together will be able to do a better job on this one.
Anne Marie, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, so I think that there's a difference between the hiring committee and the search committee.
The search committee.
Right. Yeah. So, and I think last time when we did our search, I wouldn't say we were passive, but we were not proactively looking for candidates. Mm-hmm. We allowed AASB to do that for us. We hired them to run our search, and they put out the announcements. They talked with candidates. But I think that's one thing that we talked about the other night, and I've talked with some other people about. We have a lot of tentacles into the education community and a lot of resources that we could use. Rich Carlson, our interim superintendent, has a lot of connections because he's been a superintendent for a long time. Michael Beyer, who is our former superintendent, he is working for the university, doing training for incoming superintendents or people who just want to get their superintendent endorsement. So he's seeing that next level. And then we have some other connections throughout the community for people who have been in education and just know people. And so I think that's one thing that I would like to see us do is kind of reach out to all these different people who know Haynes and would have an idea kind of the type of person who would be a good fit and would be successful here so that we can somewhat solicit people to apply, you know, just to make sure that, you know, if someone's on the fence about applying that we do that personal, mm-hmm. that personal touch. So,
and that's actually a difference between how we ran our long-term superintendent search and how we ran our search for our interim superintendent. We didn't just hope that people called us for the interim superintendent. We made sure that those phone calls went out and those conversations were made. And so we actually had a great pool of interim superintendent candidates that I hope perhaps that strategy will yield a better outcome in terms of the applicant pool.
Right. I was really excited about our pool for the interim superintendents. And I just thought, gosh, you know, wouldn't it be great if, you know, the two folks that we didn't hire, you know, if they applied for the long-term position, that would be great. They were super candidates. They had a lot of skills that would be great here.
It sort of reminds me when we don't have enough candidates running for school board, and then like five people put their names in to be appointed for that seat. I'm like, you could have run, you
know? Right.
But still, I think it's not too late just to put your name in as a write-in candidate for this election. Is that true?
It's not too late. And that was actually something that I was going to ask you about at the end. But
okay,
since we're
sorry,
talking
let's talk about it
now,
whenever you want.
No, it's okay. Since we're talking about it now, it has been a struggle, it seems, to get people to run for school board in recent years. I know last year it was also an uncontested race, but with two incumbents. And this year it's three incumbent candidates, and there's still one seat that nobody is running for yet. Why do you think that is, and what can be done about that?
Whose turn is it?
I think it's your
turn. Is it my turn? Why do I think that is? I'd like to think it's because folks think we're just doing such a skookum job that they don't that we don't need their help. It's probably that. I don't know. I think there's we are all really busy, and it may seem that running for an elected office is a lot of work, and perhaps, you know, without a great effect, and at the school, you know, if you're generally happy with how your student is doing or how your experience was at the Haynes School, you may think, you know, it's fine. I have more important things to do with my time. And but I will say, although I'm not satisfied every day with my personal contribution to the school district, it is satisfying on a long-term level to know that you're doing your best and putting time into the experience of our students and our student body and our school community. So I would just like to say that it's a satisfying experience. It's not the hardest thing you've ever done. And having a wide range of perspectives on any elected body in the school board certainly is, it's really a good thing. We make better decisions when we share our different perspectives and listen to one another. And so I do hope that I know we'll be able to fill this interim seat, but I hope that somebody will even throw their name in as a write-in candidate or two or three and give it a try.
Emery, do you have any thoughts on that?
So the school board is an elected body, and I think that there are, you know, there's something about that, you know, some people say, oh, I don't want to have to run for an election. And I totally understand that. I was appointed to a seat the first time, and you know, it definitely is kind of a gentler way to do that. And I think perhaps people, just thinking about our current makeup on the board. So 6 out of 7 of us joined the school board when we had kids in the school. So you think, oh, I've got a vested interest. I've got kids in the school. But also, when you have a young family and kids in the school, things are really busy and you're working, you got kids, you know, you're running a house. I mean, all these things that, you know, take up your time. And the school board, I think, is very supportive. We try to be really supportive of each other, mm-hmm. and time commitments, and also about information. So I don't think you have to know much about budgeting or, you know, policy at a school in order to be in the school board, because you'll learn it as you go. And I think it just takes an interest and some common sense. And I like what you said, Sarah, about just having discussions and different positions. I remember when I first got on the school board, there were several people who from a political standpoint, I'm diametrically opposed with. And we had some great discussions. And, you know, it just really, I think, sharpens your position on an issue, or makes you question, well, wait a minute. So why is it that I think this? And, you know, is that really, you know, am I really, you know, thinking about it the right way?
Right.
And,
yeah.
And one of the things that I really love about being on the school board, as opposed to maybe being on the assembly, is that we have one job, and that's to determine what's best for kids. You know, how can the school make decisions that are best for the kids? And, it's just fun and it's exciting.
Well, we are dangerously close to running out of time, so I want to ask if either of you have any final thoughts, anything you want the voters to know about you, Sarah?
Well, I guess if you want to know anything about me, I'd love to talk to more people about school policy and what you're thinking, what your hopes and thoughts are about the school district, and how things are going. I said it before, but we make better decisions when we hear from folks. And I sometimes do feel like I get caught in a bubble where I'm talking to the same folks over and over. So if you'd like to talk about school policy, you can email any of us on the school board. Our email addresses are our first initial and last name at hbsd.net. So for me, that's schapel at hbsd.net. My phone number is 314-3074. And I'd love to talk to you, or you can text me, or I do like to hear from folks, and especially if you don't agree with something, we want to know.
Anne-Marie, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I guess I would just echo, you know, what Sarah said. You know, if you have any, if you have anything, you know, anything that you want to talk about the school, or if you think a decision that I'm thinking about is wrong, feel free to call. You know, and I guess I just also would encourage people to either run as a write-in candidate or to apply for the vacancy that we're going to have if no one is a write-in.
And being on the school board comes with lots of training, too. So you get lots of great training that's good for life, and we'll give it to you. You don't have to know everything. That's it.
All right. Anne-Marie Palmieri and Sarah Chapel are two of the three incumbent candidates for Haines School Board. Brian Clay is also on the ballot, but could not be here today. Anne-Marie and Sarah, thanks so much for being here this morning.
Thank you, Abby.
Thanks, Abby.
The municipal election takes place on October 3rd. There are currently three candidates for four open school board seats, and there is still time to file as a write-in candidate. And that's it for Lynn Canal Voice. I'm Abby Collins. Thanks for joining me this hour. Today's program will be rebroadcast Saturday at noon for those who weren't able to tune in this morning. You can also listen to it online at khns.org. This is KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Clequan.